They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
You're potentially the face of a franchise. I don't want that face to be that of an asshole.
Russ Ivanek.
Taking out of my logical mind for a minute. He's just fun to watch.
And Justin Marcus.
Just park the khaki elephant in the room. No.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts so bad. If you're a Michigan fan, you're definitely you're not having the best last few days. It's been a rough go of it after the fall to Notre Dame. One guy who I know is actually probably having a great week is Justin Marcus.
What's happening? I'll be kind. I didn't expect it to be like that, man. But I'll be respectful of your team.
That's fine. Someone who's definitely hurting with me is Russ Ivanek.
Yeah, I was staring at that game through a beer glass and still couldn't get through the whole thing without being angry.
Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough one to watch. Expectations, I feel like, were a lot higher. But at the same time, I think it opened up some holes we weren't aware of us having, and it gives us the opportunity to fix it. One big thing to me, and I understand one thing can't be the decider of a game, but the ejection for targeting early on, I think, hurt us a lot, because on a few plays later, they go deep for a touchdown in the end zone, and the guy who the defensive back who didn't make the play was the guy who stepped in for the person kicked out for targeting. I you know, those little things can somehow make a difference a lot more than we realize, Russ.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up too, because yeah, I wanted to bring that up later. Yeah, after Metellus got ejected, they meet that same drive through a touchdown, and later in the game, that backup dropped a pick deep in Notre Dame territory. So in a game that wasn't nearly as close to the score, it could have been even closer if not for that ejection.
Oh, absolutely. And correct me if I'm wrong here. I get I have a little bit of Wolverine goggles when it comes mm-hmm. to this, but the play to the back of the end zone, the receiver made the catch on, that ball went right through the safety's hands, through his hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very athletic, it's a good play for that tight end to make that catch. But a starting quality safety breaks that up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was a little biased. When I first saw the play, I had a hard time seeing the targeting. After a minute of going back over a little bit, I realized, okay, there's room there to make that call. But on the other side, to me, it didn't get started out very good early, because we get called on a pass interference early in the game. That if you watch the play, the receiver has his arm fully extended on the guy to get him pushed off, and then the defensive back reaches to try to get his bearings and don't lose him entirely, and we get the call there. It just felt a little early on, but obviously, like I said, one thing cannot be the decider. Shea Patterson did not look like the Shea Patterson I was backing. He struggled early on. We couldn't get things clicking. That final, and somehow we still found ourselves technically in the game late, and then mm-hmm. of course the sack fumble kind of put the dagger in it on us, and it was tough to watch. Justin, oh God, this is gonna hurt to ask. Justin, after seeing that game, seeing the recap or whatever, what to you is the big glaring hole in Michigan football right now?
I honestly, it might be an easy target, but I think it's the quarterback play. I think there's a lot of focus on the QB play, and Shea coming out of the pocket was scary to watch. And I think a bunch of stats were floating around all week this week, but the glaring need of, like, you haven't had a wide receiver catch a touchdown over 50 quarters of football. Like, I expect Michigan, like, I'm trying to be fair about this. I expect Michigan to, like, show us an offense. Show us, even if it's, like, rudimentary, show us an offense. I know they have players on the field, but, like, I think it starts at the quarterback play. I did not like how, I understand he was cramping, but Shea Patterson coming in and out of the game, and they put McCaffrey in for, like, one play, and then he came back out, and then he had a whole series, and then they went right back. Like, just if Patterson's out, let McCaffrey play and finish the game.
Well,
like,
Russ can tell you, in our little text, but it was Russ, Paul, and I, texting during that game, I said, if McCaffrey's out there and playing well and we're driving, don't cut that momentum. Let McCaffrey stay. I understand Shea Patterson big touted guy, comes to us. He is our quarterback this year. But if a guy's struggling and we have someone get in there and he's got any form of momentum, let it go. I want to see that momentum. I really do. Go ahead, Russ.
Oh, no, I'm just going to tack on and say absolutely. There was no other momentum anywhere else in the game. You finally had one good thing going for you. Keep it going.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And Shea Patterson, 20 of 30, 227, 66 completion rating, almost 7.5 yards an attempt, one interception, three sacks, 123 QB rating. So numbers there aren't exactly, like, frightening if you're going to get behind him. The one interception to no touchdowns is definitely what you don't want to see. It's tough for me because I think the big glaring thing here, and Ross, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, I think it's we have this such highly touted defense that a quarterback made us look like a Pop Warner football team trying to keep contained. We've got two guys running off the edge that are two of the scariest guys I can imagine, and a middle linebacker who's just as horrifying, and all three of them looked like they had never played the game of football in that first quarter.
Well, pretty much. Anytime it was a third down or a second and short, they were going to get it. First down, second down, most of the time, run plays, looks good. But as soon as the chips went down, couldn't stop anybody. And, yeah, I expected a ton more out of this defense. I understand Notre Dame finished as a top 15 team last year, and they started this year as a top 15 team. But you can't let them walk out and do basically whatever they wanted on offense the first two drives and start the game 14-0.
Oh,
that's not even close to the defense that, let alone hype, that we saw for a good portion of last year.
Oh, I completely agree. And the scary thing for me is the inability, and again, it's week one, there's definitely a possibility to iron it out. The inability to contain the mobile quarterback scares me because as we get a little bit further into this season and start playing Big Ten players or Big Ten teams, you start looking at the quarterbacks we have to face. Lewerke's not exactly the slowest guy on the planet. Ohio State, all these teams have some serious talent at the quarterback position, like your guy McSorley, who can move. What's going to happen when we have to play them and the games really mean something? If for some reason we can turn it around in the next upcoming weeks, kind of get back into the conversation, and then we have to start going through that tough schedule we talked about against guys who are real talent. I mean, it scares the hell out of me if we can't figure out how to keep a quarterback in the pocket.
Yeah, I think you guys have 3 weeks to prep for Northwestern. I think you'll do just fine against Western. I think you'll do fine against Central. And then I think SMU is in there. Trust me, I enjoyed the living hell out of watching Michigan lose. But trying to just have like a clear mind and talk about it like a normal human being, you've got 3 weeks to get it right. You've got 3 weeks to develop some kind of offense and you could take on that frisky team of Northwestern and maybe steer the ship back into a better place. I don't know. I think it starts with the QB play. And I think that's where they have to start focusing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely it does. And again, Justin, you kind of led us perfectly into it. Play Western this week. Russ, we went through the schedule and we all had this checked off as a W. But after seeing, like, what happened this past week, still confident that this should be a great tune-up game, or a little worried that if we take what happened this past week into this week, we could see a little more struggle out of U of M?
Well, I'll say it this way. It damn well better be a tune-up game. This is a Western team that just lost to Syracuse, who I guess has a football program.
There's a rumor they do, yeah.
They lost to them 55-42 last week. That's literally a Syracuse basketball score.
I was going to say
the sport that they can play.
Syracuse football team is actually just their basketball team doing conditioning for the winter. So yeah, that's pretty much what they had to face.
No, if Michigan doesn't go out and score at least 40, then Harbaugh should be forced to hire an actual offensive coordinator, because that's ridiculous. It better be a tune-up. I'm confident it'll be a tune-up. If it's not, we're going to be a whole lot closer to Justin's predictions for the teams than ours.
Yeah, I completely agree. Justin, I want to get your opinion on the game too, but Russ, I want to ask you one quick question, because then as soon as we're done with Justin, we're going to move on to Michigan State football. After the not amazing game we had this past week, realistically, What numbers do you need to see out of Shea Patterson to get back to being, okay, you're the guy, we brought in, you're the guy we want. What do you need out of him? 304 touchdowns?
I need the number two. I need two passing touchdowns.
Okay.
We had 9 passing touchdowns all last year across all the different quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a damn touchdown. I don't really care about yardage as much because, hey, maybe Patterson ends with 151 yards because they just came out and ran the ball like crazy and didn't need to throw. That's fine. I need passing touchdowns, though. I need to prove that you can do that. And that's where it starts. That's where it ends with me. Win the game. Win it by a lot. Throw the ball finally.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention, you and I, we said in our text group that this offense does look a little more of a dink and dump kind of offense.
Yeah.
We're not going too deep very often unless we get the matchup we want. We're just going to pick you apart finding the open man, which I have no problem with if it's effective. If we keep stalling out on drives and can't do it, okay, I'm going to start saying you need to work something else in. But little dink and dump offense, it can work. It really can. So, Justin, for you, again, I think we all agree this should be a tune-up game. As the cynic of Michigan, what do you see this game being?
They should win. I think that it needs to be a statement game. I mean, it's not going to be like the best game of the week, but I think if Harbaugh can get his squad lined up to say, look, give it everything you got. I don't care how tired you are. We need to right whatever the hell just happened. So I hope they win. But conversely, if they lose, I think that's a huge swing in the rest of the season. I think it's going to be pretty damning, and it's going to cause a lot of frustration. The media will eat it up like it was just free candy. So, but in reality, they should win. They should blow them out. They don't have P.J. Fleck. They don't have the big wideout that got drafted. He was a
Corey Davis.
His name is. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it's Western. Like, they focus on Central Michigan more so than Michigan, but. I'm going to tell you something. If we're watching this game and it's like halftime and it's like 10-7 and like Western is still hanging in, that's a problem. Like, you guys should take a commanding lead by half without fail.
Okay.
Yep.
Last question. The ESPN has the spread at +28 for Western. You going to take them to cover? Russ?
Oh, was that to me?
Yeah. Whoever wants to answer. Russ or Jay.
I mean, I'll go and say, I'm gonna take Michigan because I'm holding Harbaugh to some kind of a standard that he's gotta go and finally start doing the things that good coaches do.
Okay.
And that includes beating Western by 28 points.
Okay. Jay?
No, I've had a weird feeling ever since I looked at the schedule and like I know where the program is at. I mean, Michigan will win, but I don't think they cover the points. I oddly think it's going to be this like 7-10 at half, and Michigan wins by a score, and it's not going to be like dramatic or anything, but it'll be a drawn out game that should not be as close as it might be. I have a weird feeling, man. I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. Now, Jay, this one's going to go right to you. Actually, speaking of weird feelings, how weird of a feeling did you get last week against Utah State?
Dude, I spent like in a normal amount of time watching the left tackle on the O-line. It was his first time playing in that role. But I swear to God, our left tackle is going to get Lewerke's head just like ripped off of his body.
Yeah.
And it scares the living shit out of me. What also scares the living shit out of me is this vanilla offense that we always show on week one. Lewerke threw for 33 attempts last year against Bowling Green, and he threw the same amount this time against Utah. I just, like, we come out and we don't show a whole lot. We run the ball way too much. We stick to the same program, and it's uncomfortable. It was too damn close the whole time. Like, it's week one. I'm already standing about 7 inches away from my TV with my arms folded, rocking back and forth like I'm holding a baby, because I'm the baby who needs to be held.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. I had a real hard time, but they always do that. They have this, like, they're not going to show everything. They're not going to give it all they got. There's, like, fatigue that it looks like. But I had, you know, Felton Davis, Cody White, and Lewerke are the reason why we won that game. The ground game finally got established in the second half. But that's not how you start the year. Like, it's a win, but I'm not, like, pounding my chest, go green, go white. I have issues with this team right now.
Oh, absolutely. Lewerke, 23-33, 287, two touchdowns, one interception. LJ Scott, 23 carries for 84 yards. That's not really what you want to see in what should be a good warm-up game out of your premier back. Not even a little bit. I agree, Felton Davis kept you in it. The end of the game interception was kind of like it helped kind of calm everyone. But this did not, to me, look, I mean, and I'm not trying to get down on State. They won the game. But this, to me, whether it is D'Antonio just kind of coming out and not showing his hand early, this, did not look like a team that was ready to play. They looked very flat early on, and it puts a little worry if you're a Spartan fan on what you're going to see this year, because you don't really want a coach who's not going to turn it on every time. So it's tough. Russ, assuming you watched this game because it's Spartans, what did you see out of Michigan State's defense that's a little bit of a worry?
The pass defense, I'll say, because the run defense certainly was there.
Yeah.
25 carries, 25 rushing yards. That is elite production. It's probably the only elite thing that happened on the field that day, though. To go up and give 319 yards to Jordan Love, who I assume isn't someone's fake porn name, I don't know. That's a bit disappointing. To get only two sacks, that's a bit disappointing. I personally, even as a Wolverine fan, I hold the Michigan State defense in high regard, and I expected a whole lot more out of them. They scored 38 points on offense. That should be enough for a blowout.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, they still did win, and I had much rather a close win against a crappy team than a loss against a good team any day. But they've got some work to do in that secondary before we get to the Big Ten schedule.
All right. Now, sticking with your statement of a great run defense, Arizona State's running back it's 16 carries, 131 yards and one touchdown. But on the same side, their quarterback was 18 of 24 for 237 and four touchdowns. Their number one receiver in that game had six catches for 140 yards and two touchdowns. Bigger test for this Spartan defense on both sides now, Russ?
I mean, I guess technically, but all those numbers got put up against UTSA. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about, you know, a cupcake? Cupcake?
It's true.
I mean, Herm Edwards is only doing so much there. It'll be more of a test than Utah State, but all those numbers got to be taken with a grain of salt there for who they were playing, who's practically a D2 school.
Yeah, that's more than fair. Justin. This is a late game, so I would assume you're going to need a nap before it starts. my question for you really is, we had Michigan State getting off to a nice roaring start. I'm not saying that Arizona State's going to come in and, like, you know, whoop you guys down. But after that first week showing, assuming D'Antonio's going to actually turn all the engines on and start going, are you a little weary going to this game, or do you feel like you're going to see the Spartans you predicted a couple of weeks ago just rip through Arizona, shut down the run, shut down the pass? Lewerke is going to get it started. LJ Scott's going to become the train we know him to be.
So I still have the confidence that they'll go and they'll travel and they'll win, which would be the first time a Big Ten team has traveled to Arizona and beat them in their own home.
Okay.
But that stat right there is what gives me some pause, because I believe in that, I believe in that juju. Like, I have a gut feeling that the Michigan game is going to be close. I have a gut feeling that I'm going to have some moments where I want to break my TV, and it's going to be late, and I can't because my kids are sleeping. I got to be quiet and be angry, which is very difficult for us. It's a late game. It's in a stadium that Big Ten has not won in, and I have issues. I really do. I don't know how they get out of it looking like heroes. And, you know, maybe if D'Antonio has the ability just to say, all right, everyone, this is what we have because we just need to lock in this W, I would love to see what it is. So if it's a prove-it game, I demand a very clean, less penalties, more, you know, more concise game out of them on the road. But I don't know. I'm going back and forth, man. You got to stop me because I won't stop talking about it.
That's fine. Naturally, none of us are taking the victory away from them. I think we're all on the same page that it's a W. But my last question, Russ, I'm going to have you go first because I know Justin will have some long-winded statement here. my last question to you, and it's sticking to the spread, our little spread, a little disconcerting that a top 15 team is going up against an Arizona State football team, which no one's really expecting a lot out of this year, and it's only a 5.5-point spread.
Ooh, that's it?
Plus 5.5.
Ooh, so I know there's the whole, like, 3 points. You get 3 points for being the home team. So if it's neutral site, maybe that's 8.5. That still seems a little tight to me. I mean, I would think State takes it by about 10.
Okay.
I'd expect something like that. I think that line's a little too small.
Okay, that's fair. Jay, it's the same question to you, but I'm going to rework it a little bit. What to you is a little more skeptical? The 5.5-point spread or the fact that the over-under is 53 points?
God, I don't like either of those.
I know.
Whoa.
That was the first time I've heard both of those lines. Like,
I'm looking at the ESPN Pick Center right now. I've got the matchup up. Spread's 5.5, money line's 185, and the over-under is 53.5 points.
Wow. So a high-scoring, close game.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, knowing State has a pretty good defense, going against Arizona State, which, again, cupcake game, but numbers show they can still complete passes and they can still run the football and execute. A little disconcerting that your Spartans are going to potentially give up 20-something points and, you know, getting the W, 20 points, and still get a 53-point game out of this?
Do you ever eat a meal, and when you see the food that you're putting on your fork and putting in your mouth, you're like, I don't know how this is going to go. Like, that, like, stomach drop feeling. Like, that's where I'm at right now. I just looked at my tuna, and I'm like, what am I eating?
Yeah.
Like, I'll take the points. I think we're a Felton Davis catch, you know, to covering the spread. But it doesn't sit well, man. I'm going to be – I got some problems on Saturday night going into Sunday morning.
All right. Fair to end. Justin, Michigan State wins by more than 6 points.
I'll take it just to try to get lucky. Just one time, I'll take it.
Okay. I'm going to go with Justin on this. I'm with Russ, though. You guys should win this by – I'm going to go even higher. You guys should win this by 2 touchdowns. Assuming everyone shows up, because I like Lewerke. As much as I give Justin crap, I like Lewerke. I think he's a good player. LJ Scott, if he can just play well, he's a premier back. He's a good running back. You've got a lot of offensive weapons, and you've got a good defense. You're going against Arizona State, which, as we've all agreed, is not a football school. It's a party school. They literally have their own Instagram for just their parties. It's just – it's an absolute – Justin's a follower of that Instagram. It's just – this shouldn't be a tough game. And that first week showing – and like we said, whether it's a D'Antonio not turning it all on or just an honest struggle – to get going, this should be a better game for you guys. You should be able to handle your business. And to me, as same as we said for Western Michigan, this should be a real turn it on, let's get everyone going game. Let's beat them down by a couple touchdowns and feel comfortable as we get the season started. That's just where I am with it.
I hope so, man.
Absolutely, and we'll see what happens. All right, well, let's move on to the one team that we're actually all fans of, but we also love to hate. The Lions open up the season Monday Night Football against the New York Jets. Wasn't a great preseason for the Detroit Lions. It was not a lot of fun to watch. The Baker Mayfield came out and made us kind of look like he's been doing this for a while, torched us. And I got to say, my 11-5 prediction, I'm having a hard time holding on to faith of it. I'm still putting them as a winning football team this year. But, I'm starting to think that maybe – similar to last year record, 10-6. I'm starting to think that's where we land. And I got to ask, after this preseason showing, and as we've all agreed, preseason is not necessarily indicative of a year or of a regular season. Russ, you a little cautious about this team, or you still think where you put them is where they're going to be?
No, I'm definitely cautious, and I'd probably knock them down a win or two in my projection there. And not necessarily because of the on-field product, but because of the questionable roster moves that have happened, that's what worries me more. That okay, I get it. The whole Patriots way, and hey, we're going to shock you with somebody we cut at some point, and it's going to happen because they like to think they're the smartest guys in the room. But we talk about cutting Sheed. We talk about Ayers being in for like 27 and a half minutes or something, and then Zettel getting cut. It makes you question two of those guys. This front office brought them in this offseason, and we're just shipping them out. It makes me question the player evaluation of the front office. So if it's so flawed that they're not even sure who they're bringing in and who they're going, how can I trust that the other guys, all the guys that are supposed to be providing a pass rush, can actually get the job done?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That is actually – that's very fair. Justin, I guess really same question to you. I mean, I know you've never really been high on the Lions. You got a couple players you really like, but, I mean, as we said, preseason prediction, what we said they were going to do, you still going with it?
Yeah, I think I had them pegged at 7-9 or 8-8, one of the two. I mean, this is just another football team that makes me stand inches away from my TV and rock back and forth. I think Russ has it spot on, but what popped in my mind that, like, you know, different sports, but when I compare it to the Red Wings and their front office and their lack, I would rather have a team make more moves than not, even if those moves mean they fail. Because, like, I try to compare like how the Red Wings operate, and I'm just like, I'm shaking them, like, do something. But then you see dudes like Ayers who, you know, they, like, revolving door, like, hello, goodbye. Like, he's out the door. I don't know which way I'd rather have it. But I think Russ is right in the fact that neither of it looks good. The optics of it are shit. And I don't think the Lions are going to get any respect after, A, the preseason, and, B, some of the roster moves they've made. So I'm keeping them at my 7-9, 8-8 territory. Khalil Mack entering the division doesn't help any at all. So I think I've got them nestled into their little home where we're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, and honestly, as we're talking about moves, Zettel no longer being here, one of the top stories was that Green Bay Packers made a hard push for Anthony Zettel. We could have seen Khalil Mack come in and then one of our better defenders leave and go to a competing team. Things could have gone real bad for us. To me, though, I'm not super upset about the Zettel move. I obviously he's a player that we expected to perform well for us this year. And honestly, I kind of am taking the leap of faith here, trusting that, Quinn and Patricia kind of know what they're doing. They kind of have a picture for what they want this team to be. Honestly, to get rid of Anthony Zettel and bring in this Romeo, was it Aquara? Don't know a lot about the guy, but if Patricia and Quinn are getting rid of one of our top D linemen to bring in this guy, I got to assume they saw something that makes them think this guy can be a contributor to this football team. A little more surprised at the fact that Amir Abdullah is still on this football team. That to me was not something I expected. I expected him to, cutting him, I see where there's not a benefit there, but I fully expected them to trade him away. I expected them to see an opportunity and get rid of him, and that never happened. So it makes me wonder what capacity he's going to play in this team this year. I mean, we've all been kind of in agreement that Riddick, Blunt, and Kerryon Johnson are the three main guys here. We're paying Abdullah some money. I want to know what I'm spending my money on to have him be a Detroit Lion. It's a little disconcerting to me. And the other thing is I hate the fact that either of these backup quarterbacks are still on this football team.
Yep.
I think we were all in agreement on outside hire. I still think outside hire is a possibility. I just think that we're going to see it come in the middle of a week, like a week or two from now. I think they're going to realize, hey, Stafford's all right, but we definitely need to make sure we've got the guy we want. I wouldn't be surprised to see them bring in someone. A few names were dropped out. I definitely a possibility for me.
So, yeah, I think, just to kind of build off that, I'll try to address them in order there. Zettel, I mean, he got claimed by the Browns, Packers, Vikings, and Chargers. Mm-hmm. Vikings and Chargers both have some pretty good defensive lines, so somebody sees a value in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had 6.5 sacks, but yeah, he also wasn't versatile and sucked in the run. So while I get that it's concerning because you see, hey, he was our second best pass rusher by stats last year, he did a lot of things not very well that he needed to. But we have 6 receivers and 9 offensive linemen on the roster.
you didn't need to cut from possibly the weakest position group of the entire team. No, that's what concerns me more than Giselle's talent, because I think at the end of the day, he's probably just a guy, you know, nothing really any special. But enough of the tree tackling elephant in the room. We can move on to the other stuff.
But I think to me though, one little thing that I wanted to add in, I think that they see something in Carry Hyder that we may not.
I really do.
Because think about it. Carry Hyder injured all last year. We didn't get a sample out of him. I think that, truth be told, after watching this preseason and kind of keeping an eye, I think they see something in Carry Hyder that they plan to try to go with. And that might be why you wouldn't think Zettel would be the casualty there, but they may have seen something in Carry Hyder that makes them think, hey, he's kind of expendable here. I would have tried to trade him, but.
Yeah, there was interest.
Absolutely, but that's just me. I think they saw something in Carry Hyder that we may not get to see because we don't see him every day. That would just be me.
Yeah, I certainly hope you're right. We should be able to find out pretty soon here because, hey, there's plenty of opportunity on that defensive line right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess to go with Abdullah, I don't really think we're going to be able to see what the Lions are paying him for because that man is insurance right now. With keeping Powell on the roster, Abdullah's not winning a return job.
No.
That's pretty much what Powell does. You know, that's what Jamal Agnew does. And they both do it better than Abdullah. He's the fourth running back. We're only going to see him if someone goes down. And now, hey, the way it happens in the NFL with running backs, we'll probably see him at some point. But I don't think it'll be anytime soon. So, I don't know. I guess pass the Gatorade, Amir. I don't know what else you're going to be doing for a while. And then the last one with the quarterbacks, I mean, geez, kind of underscores why it's a good idea to take a quarterback every couple of years because A.J. McCarron was had for a fifth-round pick, Teddy Bridgewater for a third-round pick, backups just getting traded. I don't know if I'd want to spend that much, but God, give me something. Bring some guys out. Try them out. See if they can beat out Castle because, we can't have Castle on this team. I talk about the curse every single week, and it's going to happen. Mark my words, if he is on this roster throughout the whole season, he'll start a game, and it won't be for a good reason.
No, that's fair. That really is fair. I guess the only name that's coming to mind here, and he's not a guy I really want, but it's a sample, I guess. Would you be upset to hear them say they're bringing Paxton Lynch in for a tryout?
No, I actually think you should bring him in. Do I think he's any good or a starter? No. But he was a first-round pick not that long ago, and so he's got some tools. Do I have any faith in Matt Castle? No. So does it matter that I don't have any faith in Paxton Lynch? It's still probably better.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, Justin, you've made your opinion clear on the guy a couple times. Where are you at with the fact that Amir Abdullah is still on this football team?
I think it's a problem that we have, you know, like five people trying to squeeze through one door that fits one person. Like, we have an excess of backs and we have a clear shortage in quarterbacks. And I'd hope that there's some concerted effort to try to flip Abdullah, take him to San Francisco. They need another dude and try to get another piece at quarterback or pick up a free agent or somebody. Like, I don't like that, you know, obviously as a fan, we don't know what the hell they actually do on a day-in, day-out basis, and we have to put blind faith. We have to put blind faith in the fact that they know what they're doing with Abdullah, they know what they're doing with the quarterback position, and that Patricia knows what he's doing with the defense. And they didn't show us anything preseason on any of those topics. And now we have to go into the biggest stage of all, week one, Monday Night Football against the flipping Jets, who we should beat.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I hope we get answers to all. It's like watching a show that has a cliffhanger and the new season starts up. I want to know all the answers week one. I don't want to have to wait until we get a better opponent. I want to see if Abdullah is just on special teams and like that's his role, and which I think was Jamal Agnew's. And I want to see Patricia put the defense together. And I want to pray to God I never see a single backup quarterback. That means the year is over. So they put themselves in like a really shitty spot if you think about it. And they have expectations to meet come Monday night.
Yeah, I totally agree, and those are a lot of expectations that I have a feeling we're not going to get solid answers to for a couple weeks, which is a little scary to me. But you mentioned them. We got to talk about them. We go up against the New York Jets, week one, Monday Night Football. Jets kind of made some moves that are a little shocking. As Russ said, traded away Teddy Bridgewater, name the rookie quarterback, Sam Darnold, starting quarterback. Russ, I'll let you go here. Expectations for Sam Darnold, week one, Monday Night Football.
Well, let me spin a little yarn for you here.
You spin away, my friend.
Yeah. 10 years ago to this week, there was a number three overall pick taken. Quarterback. Started week one against the Detroit Lions. First NFL pass. Long touchdown. And then they ended up going 11-5 and getting a playoff spot that year. It was young Matt Ryan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fast forward to now, number three overall pick, quarterback, Sam Darnold, starts week one against the Lions. I'm going to go ahead and say that history's not going to quite repeat itself. But let's just say if he throws a touchdown on the first drive, just turn off the TV. We know how it's going to end, and it doesn't end pretty.
I was getting a little concerned that you were, I was getting a little concerned you were about to compare a unproven rookie quarterback to one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Oh, so. No. Yeah. See, I just got to use, you know, numbers and history to prey on the Lions fatalistic view.
That's fair.
Everyone has. No,
I'm brutal.
It is still the Jets. The Lions are still 5-1 against the spread in their last six Monday night games. The Jets were 28th in the league in sacks last year. So the Lions' main weakness, protecting the quarterback. The Jets haven't rushed the quarterback all that well in recent history. I guess temper expectations with Sam Darnold. There's going to be some plays that we'll see why they're starting him. I think there's going to be more plays that we're going to say, hey, Josh McCown might need to be starting this game. So the secondary's still good for the Lions. I'm thinking Slay gets a pick because as good as Robbie Anderson, I'm told, is, I'm not sold on him being a number one receiver.
Yeah.
And I think that's a matchup Slay can take advantage of.
Yeah, definitely. There's no point in really circling the drain here. Justin, Detroit Lions, how many points are we putting up against the New York Jets?
Hopefully we cover the spread and then some. I mean, I have high expectations for them, even though they set the bar pretty damn low for themselves. I hope they go out and just show us what we all wanted to see preseason. Like, I hope it's a show and tell game for them big time. I don't mean to put it on a different topic, but it's like all three of these teams, Michigan, Michigan State, and the Lions, they all have something to lose this weekend. Yeah. If it's U of M, it's their program. If it's Michigan State, it's their season. And if it's the Lions, it's just losing faith in what's trying to be built. And, like, they all need to win equally. But, like, the only team that has a good crack at, like, getting in to the playoffs and, like, just winning a fucking playoff game is the Lions. So, like, they got the most to lose, but it's the Jets. Like, come on. They have to do it.
Well, let's.
But because they have to do it, they won't do it. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Let's be as transparent as we can. The spread, 6.5 points in favor. The Lions are favored. Over-under is 45. So, you got to wonder. Jay, are you're thinking that they can cover a 6.5 point spread?
Yeah, I think so. Because we're either going to be really good or really shitty. I don't think there's a middle ground between that. So we're either going to turn the Jets on a terrible Jets team, or we're going to look like crap in front of Monday Night Football.
which we're very good at doing. Russ, kind of same question. Cover 6.5 point spread?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I already threw out the stat about them being 5-1 against the spread on Monday Night games. I think it follows. I mean, that's one touchdown. Is all the Lions need to win by.
Yeah.
But what I'm kind of getting from Justin is he trying to say that the Lions only have one shot and they can't miss their shot to blow?
Oh, God, don't do this.
By the way, Eminem.
Yeah, we know he's going to be there.
dude, okay. I saw that on Instagram it was yesterday. I was scrolling through. I saw Eminem, like, in a hoodie. There's a black and white picture. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I've been looking at you all week. And I was like, wait a minute. The Lions posted this. And then I read and I clicked the more button. And he's a part of the coin toss. That's going to be, like, my one moment watching football. I'm going to be happy this weekend, because anything other than that, I'm probably going to be miserable.
See, I'm a little nervous because I don't know if anybody remembers the last time Eminem was part of a Michigan sport broadcast.
Oh,
when
he was stoned as hell in the box at the U of M football game.
That was weird.
I'm a little nervous, but at the same time, it's kind of like he timed out that album release pretty well, I would say. He's coming back here, all that. It's interesting. Should be a lot of fun to see. So last question about this, and then we want to move on to the whole Khalil Mack thing, because that was a big deal. Justin, your little Sam Darnold question here. What does he throw first, a touchdown or an interception?
I say interception.
Okay. Interception.
I'm gonna go with our secondary showing up on D.
Okay. Russ?
I think he'll throw a touchdown to the Lions. Give me a pick six.
Pick six. Okay.
Ooh.
All right. I was gonna bring pick six in, but I was a little skeptical.
That's the only way to undo the Matt Ryan curse from 10 years ago.
That's fair. That's
perfect
fair.
Symmetry.
Pick six to like big play Slay. I'll take it. I'm with you guys. Interception first. You know what? As much as I think Sam Darnold's going to be a decent quarterback in this league, he's got two things going against him. He's going up against a team that I think has a good enough secondary to give him trouble. I really do. His second thing, he plays for the New York Jets.
Like, that probably should have been number one.
I wanted to give us the top shelf for once in our life.
Fair enough.
He plays for the New York Jets. No matter what you do, you can get the shiniest quarterback on the planet. You still have a lot of holes in your football team. You need to work out. That's not to say the Jets can't be a decent football team, but they play in the same division as the New England Patriots, so they automatically start the year with two losses. And I feel like it's going to go downhill from there for them. I don't think this is going to be a good game for them. I think we covered the spread. I think the offense can handle its business. I'm just a little more skeptical on, can our defense be solid enough to screw with a rookie quarterback? Because, no offense, if you can't screw with a rookie quarterback, you're going to have a real hard time when we have to play those quarterbacks that are actual veterans in this league and know what to do. So I'm interested to see what we can do with it, but I'm a little worried. Lions should get a win week one for me. That's where I'm at with that. Staying in the NFL, the big Khalil Mack trade. Rumors came around, you know, earlier this year that we were in the running to maybe get him. That didn't obviously happen. I would have loved to see him go anywhere else but the NFC North, and sure enough, he moves one state away to the Chicago Bears. Justin, how scary is this that we're going to have to see Khalil Mack twice a year for the foreseeable future?
Seeing how our soft spot in our team always starts on the line of scrimmage, very scary, like legitimately scary. I'm pissed that we didn't get him. And it's probably easy to say in hindsight, but they're set up with Trubisky, Roquan Smith, and now Khalil Mack. Like, those are the people you build around. Those are your pieces that are going to create the Chicago Bears. Like, I'm jealous. And now we have to protect Stafford so he doesn't go down, so Castle plays, because Khalil Mack's in the division and he's going to try to kill our quarterback. Great. It's like, let's just put some peanut butter on the mousetrap and just watch it happen. Because that's what effectively happened by the Bears getting them.
Yeah. I will say the only thing I like about this is week one. They're the Sunday night football game against the Green Bay Packers. Khalil Mack hasn't played football lately. He's got a lot of aggression pent up. I'm kind of happy he's going to be taking it out on Aaron Rodgers week one. That to me is a little bit of a comfort. Like, hey, sure, that's great. All that aggression you have, go put it on Aaron Rodgers. Beat the crap out of him week one. Because if Green Bay has a hard time and has a hurt quarterback, opens up the division in my eyes. Russ.
What? Just real quickly, what would you do if Mack just like came in and blindsided and just destroyed Rodgers' collarbone? Like, do they just win the division after that play?
Maybe
nice slow clap.
I would honestly be okay looking at them and going, my firstborn child, it goes to you.
You've done
the right move for. See, and obviously, I'm not looking for anyone to get hurt, but the idea that week one, Khalil Mack's going to be able to go full bore at someone, I kind of like that it's a division guy. It's the same as if it was Kirk Cousins. You need that because, honestly, as we've said, you got Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Stafford, all elite quarterbacks. Trubisky still yet to be proven, but I'm pretty high on him. I think we're going to see something out of him. But you got two guys that are considered top-tier quarterbacks that you have to go up against twice a year. You're telling me week one we can maybe put a few dents in Aaron Rodgers? that's fine with me. He's got 15 weeks to have to, you know, to deal with that. And we don't see him till later in the year. Gives us a chance to kind of, you know, build some momentum against him. I'm completely fine with it. I really am. Russ, though, same question to you. Khalil Mack, horrifying?
Horrifying.
Horrifying.
But also, I kind of like your line of thought that the only way to win this division is if Rodgers isn't there, and this is the way to get rid of him.
Yeah.
So the enemy of my enemy might just be my friend until he hurts Stafford and Castle comes in.
Well, yeah. See, that's where we draw the line. Beat the crap out of the one in yellow and the one in purple. Yeah. Don't touch the one in blue. That's where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll just be like the replacements. We'll just constantly
Danny Bateman. Danny Bateman.
Don't touch.
Yeah. Green means go. Green means go. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Wasn't that Keanu Reeves?
It was.
Yeah, he says it to John Favreau. He goes, red means stop, like a streetlight, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But on a more serious note, the Lions, I mean, sacks allowed 25th in the league, 22nd in the league, 23rd in the league last 3 years. 2013 was the last time that they didn't give up 35 or more sacks or finish in the bottom 10 of the league in sacks allowed. This has not been a productive offensive line. Yes, there's some additions. We haven't seen them be productive yet.
Okay.
Adding Mack on top of that is not promising.
It's not, but at the same time, there's a reason that a defense has 11 players. That one guy, can be an impact, but, I mean, it's still horrifying because he's proved he can be a one-man wrecking crew when he gets the ability, and our offensive line is the big problem that we're going to have to deal with. Especially against him. I think this is a good thing for the Bears, but I don't think this is a saving grace for the Bears. It'll give them some improvement. I don't think it gives them enough improvement that all of a sudden they become a team we really have to worry about for the season. I still think the Bears are going to be finished last in the division. I still think that, you know, they got a lot of other problems to fix. I still think that while I like Trubisky, we don't know what we're going to get out of him. Because truth be told, we didn't get a Pro Bowl superhuman season out of him last year. He did enough to justify being a first-round pick. But, a career is made up of multiple seasons, not just one quasi-spectacular season. He's got to do it again and again, and it remains to be seen if he can repeat in a second year. It really does.
Yep.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens there. I know Justin likes Mitchell Trubisky. So, I mean... It'll be interesting to see. Adding Khalil Mack really shakes up the NFC North because, you know, when he steps on the field, he's a difference maker. It's just a question of how much of a difference can he make for a team that, you know, still has a little ways to go before they're a tough contender. And, yeah, I would love to see him beat up on Aaron Rodgers because, as we've said, as much as I'd love to argue that Tom Brady is numero uno, it goes to Aaron Rodgers. The guy is head and shoulders above everyone. He makes it look like an effortless game. So I wouldn't mind if, you know, after week one he's a little dinged up. It really wouldn't bother me one bit because we're going to need all the help we can get. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. It'll definitely be tough. And finally, this one's just a little off. We're not on football anymore. We're going to just talk about something fun. We've mentioned it on the podcast a couple times before. Tiger and Phil going to play each other in a little one-on-one match around Thanksgiving. They've decided to make it pay-per-view, and I spoke to Justin about this on the golf course the other day. I don't see why they're making this pay-per-view. I don't think that it's going to be, you know, anything that's really going to make, you know, the channels a lot of money. But my question to you, Russ, I know you're not a golf guy, so I'm sure this will be a no. But Jay, should this be a pay-per-view event? I mean, we see UFC things like that being pay-per-view because of the money draw. Is there enough of a money draw here to make Tiger versus Phil, two guys in their mid-40s, a pay-per-view event?
I will be doing two purchases of the pay-per-view for two different TVs in the house, and then hopefully if gambling is allowed in our state by then, I'll just place like a $200 bet and make my money back, and then some. Like I'm locked in. I'm locked in. I'd gamble on it once they finally get it organized in Michigan for sports betting, and like I think it's going to be awesome. I don't even care if it's shitty golf. I will pay to watch two people I like in golf go off against each other for however ridiculous amount of million dollars they're playing for.
I think it's like 18 or something like that, or 10, or it's a lot of money. Because Phil's
paying $24.99, man, any day.
Phil's gone out and started his trash talking, and it's definitely a lot of fun. Russ,
yeah.
I know you're not a golf guy, but is this something to you that should be a pay per view event?
I mean, I see the appeal for it because A, it's this big marquee event, and it's kind of, to a lesser extent, it's kind of being marketed like a boxing match or a UFC match, that it's two heavyweight titans going one-on-one. I probably wouldn't even watch it if I got it for free, but I'm not all that interested in golf to begin with.
Oh, yeah.
So that's me. I'm probably going to find out how it ends when we talk about it next podcast.
The podcast after will be when he finds out about it. That's fine. But to me, this is a great event. Like, as a golf person, I love the game. Phil Mickelson's my favorite golfer. Tiger's been, you know, the top golfer for the last 20-something years. He's still the big name. He draws the crowds. This, to me, would have been an amazing pay-per-view event 10 years ago when both of these guys were –
That's true.
Their prime. You tell me that, like, 2005, 2006, Phil against Tiger, when they were both winning majors and – they really were number one and number two in the world. That then I could see that being an event. But you're looking at two guys who are in their mid-40s. Not that they're bad golfers. Tiger's second at the tournament he's playing in right now. Phil's won a couple times this year. They're not bad, but they're literally about to go to the senior tour in a few years. They're about to move on to playing with the old guys. This just seems like something that you're capitalizing on name and not necessarily on what it could be. Had they done this 10 years ago, I think it would have been an amazing event. Still going to be a great event to watch. I'm with Jay. I'm spending the money. But I think they decided to capitalize on this just a little too late. Not to mention, we have the Ryder Cup coming up in like 3 weeks. There's a chance these two could be paired together on a team against other guys. I mean, that's great for the publicity of, hey, look, the two guys that are about to face off in 2 months are on a team together. But I just think that they decided to do this a little too late, and that's unfortunate.
That's a solid point, though, man. Yeah. Like, they probably make more money 10 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
If they did it back then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but I mean, back then it's the number one and number two player in the world, the guy who was appointed the best golfer of all time, against the one person who the only guy that ever seemed to be able to hang with him. I mean, if you look at the records, Phil is one of the only guys of the last 20 years that played with Tiger consistently that ever was able to actually hang with him and didn't fall apart against him. So
right.
10 years ago, this is a marquee event that I think could really, really have made some people some serious money. It's just a fact of Phil's been consistently okay. Tiger went through all his struggles. Tiger's finally back and in some ways able to play the game at a high level. Hey, why don't we make them play each other now when they're both not even in the top 20 in the world anymore? So, it's a little rough, a little tough. I honestly, I say I'll pay for the pay per view. I'll probably just come over to Justin's house, to be honest.
There you go.
I'll probably just come over to his house.
And if you've got that pegged right, it's just a money grab, and they're taking it out of my pocket.
Oh, absolutely, it really is, though. I mean, honestly, $10 million. Neither of them are forking up a dime of it. It's going to be their sponsors and the network and all that putting the money up. So really, no one's losing here. If anything, they're just going out and playing two more rounds of golf like they do every week. So it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see it. I think it's going to be a great time. But it made me think. Obviously, we haven't done the best of lately because we've actually had some serious sports stuff to talk about. But in a little way of continuing that, I want to know, outside of the mainstream, like UFC, that kind of stuff, Justin, what is something to you, like a sporting event, that you would actually pay pay-per-view to watch? And if you say that shopping show, I'm going to flip out.
I almost wanted to say Supermarket Sweep. honestly, the three that I thought of, first of all, bubble hockey. If they can create like a bubble hockey league where I can just watch people play foosball but bubble hockey style, I'm in. Which then made me think of knockerball, like, but not like the current knockerball. I'm talking like on the ice, like how they do it at Little Caesars Arena, where they got a bunch of people on ice trying to kick a puck into a net. I would pay to watch a league that got created for that. And then finally, I guess I don't really need to pay for it. I could go see it. But, like, mite hockey, like the little league hockey where there's, like, 13 pucks on the ice and 50 kids and they're all just running into each other, I'm in it for the comedy. And it's all about hockey. But those are the three I'd pay money to watch.
Yeah, those are actually pretty legit. Russ, well, what about you?
I'll say there isn't a sport or event in particular that I would, because if I wanted to see it so bad, I'd probably just go out. You know, go out to a bar or something and watch it. I guess the only exception would be if a team that I'm invested in, like one of the Detroit teams or Michigan, if they made it to the championship, then I might do it. You know, have some people over, pay for it, make a big thing of it. But if it's just a one-off event, if it's, you know, two over 40 guys playing golf, you know, where the most recent thing that they did was the weird-ass shirt dancing commercial.
That was like, cool.
That was creepy as all hell. I already paid for the cable, the Hulu, and everything. I don't see enough of a draw unless the stakes are high enough on something that I'm already invested in.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I don't.
It's a practical ass answer.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. That's what we expect out of Russ.
Yeah, maybe I'm a cheap ass. Maybe I'm a miser. It depends on how nice you want to be when you call me names.
Hey, there's a reason why in our fantasy football league I run out of my waiver money in like half of a week, and you still have like $600 at the end of the year.
Uh huh.
It's called strategy, Justin. For me, I thought and thought and thought, and a lot of things that I would want to see, we can see now anyway. But if I'm being honest, I'm going to go a little fake here and go a little outside the world. I'm going to go with the like dodgeball, the from, you know, the Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, something like that. Just seeing a serious dodgeball tournament like that, I would actually probably pay money to watch, because like you said, Jay, you're going for the comedy, and watching these dudes just get absolutely spiked in the face with a dodgeball is usually pretty entertaining to me. I guess I'm weird like that.
I would like to change my answer to dodgeball, please.
I just think it'd be hilarious, especially if it was a season like that. You know, you get character, all these kind of different characters, the guys that take it way too seriously, the dudes who look like they have no business doing it, but because it's technically a sport they get to play, I think it'd be entertaining as hell to watch. You tell me I get to watch like an American Dodgeball Association League, I'm in.
Oh my God.
Here's my money. Take it. When my wife finds out, you're going to notice I'm not watching anymore because she killed me. But I'm all for that. I would watch that in a heartbeat. But in the same vein, being a golfer and someone who loves the game, kind of my thoughts on the whole Tiger and Phil in their prime, give me two of these guys that are actually in their prime doing this. Give me Dustin Johnson and his wife wearing a bikini playing golf for 18 years.
Oh, yeah.
God. Give me top tier players doing this. I would pay to watch that because it's actually entertaining. I mean, I get you get to see that every week, but 9 times out of 10, it's very rare to see the two guys that are in contention for the final 18 finish that way. You don't usually get the top two in the last pairing every time. So I'd pay to see that. I think it'd be entertaining, but dodgeball for me is numero uno. I think it just has to be.
Eric, if I can help you out. The National Dodgeball League was founded in 2004. It has a commissioner.
Oh, no.
It has 24 teams, and they just held their world championship in Las Vegas last year. And it's a real thing we can actually probably watch somehow.
Well, we need to find this immediately. And
there's 24 teams in it, dude.
I'm in. We need to find – dude, Armchair Sports Talk would like to be a sponsor of what is it, Jay? give it to me one more time.
This is the NDL. It's the National Dodgeball League.
Oh, okay. We would love to sponsor you. You can find us all over social media. We would love to be a part because, tell you the truth, that sounds awesome. Here's what we need to do. We need to find this, and we could just do a fantasy draft. We'll just pick players, and we will, or pick teams, and we will actually follow this for an entire year. I'm in. This sounds awesome.
Oh, I'm drafting patches of Houlihan.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Dude, they've got just like, there's a 5.5-hour streaming thing here of the national championship.
5.5 hours?
Yeah. Oh, my God. On their website, thendl.com.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Well, we found it. We're doing it. It's happening.
Oh,
that's awesome. That Justin just made this show. He ended the show in the best way you could end a show. It really is. It's top tier for me. That's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. I guess we got to wish luck to three teams because we're not actually going to be on again before it happens. We got to wish good luck to Michigan State. Ow, that hurt. Michigan football and Detroit Lions football because, dear God, they need it. They need a lot of luck because otherwise this is going to be a really, really rough year for us on this show because it's not going to get much better. All we have left to talk about after that is the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Pistons. Dear, I've never said it before in my life. I'm so excited for Michigan and Michigan State basketball. I'm just so excited because there's light. My thanks to Justin Marcus.
Hold your butt cheeks, fellas. It's going to be a wild weekend.
Oh, it's going to be tough. Going to be tough. Russ Ivanak, we appreciate it, man. You're the only one that keeps us sane in this show.
Well, I appreciate you breaking your streak of using words from the 1920s. Good job, buddy.
I try. I really, really. But my age shows sometimes. It really does.
Yeah, you did good. You did good this time. You actually sounded like it was 2018.
Yeah, that's fine. By the way, also, the guy that called Velez, the tight end, making the Detroit Lions. Booyah,
yep,
people.
Well done. Well done, sir.
Booyah. I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.